If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun. A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. The most original concept in podcasting since the first podcast where a bunch of dudes just talked about their dicks. This is the first, you know, like no one's ever thought of this, so we're pretty proud of this idea. You know what I mean, Vince?
Yeah, no. First time ever.
Today, our guest is a fantastic, hilarious writer. He's written for the WWE. He's written for The Guardian. He has a podcast called Full Court Chat. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Schilling. How you doing, Dave?
Oh, my God. I'm so good. It's too hot inside and outside.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to cool off with these incredible Sopranos takes.
Goddamn right,
such
dude.
Cool takes.
We're doing takes. This is going to be a cool take podcast where we just go like, instead of like trying to find different like, you know, hot, you know, spicy culture war things, we're just going to go, hey, this episode was sick.
Well, what's a cooler take than talking about a television show that's from almost 20 years?
I know. Yeah, literally. It's almost a dead take at this point.
What are we gonna say about it? It's like, oh, Richie Aprile wasn't so bad.
Yeah, right.
He was a good husband. No, we're gonna say he's a bastard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's such a good show that listen, we don't love every single episode of this show, as any listener of this podcast will attest to. But yeah, in general, our takes are lukewarm sometimes, but for the most part, cool as fuck.
God damn, we're selling the hell out of this
show. Yeah. Stop listening now.
Any advertisers.
Tune in. Well, sorry.
Sorry. We love everything. Before we get into it, we would be remiss if we didn't play the theme song. Pod. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen. Pod. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Just a wonderful theme song. Never gets old. Anyways, today, as I said before, today we're watching from season 2, episode 12, The Knight in White Satin Armor. And this episode premiered April 2nd in the year 2000. So for a bit of cultural context, my co-host Vince Mancini is going to take us in a little trip back into the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk, daddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember then, then.
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
The show just may never recover bumper. From giving Matt editing capabilities. But you know what? Now that's we got a lot of new bumpers.
That's a great bumper, dude. I think it. All right.
It's pretty good. I liked it.
I had to find a Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons song called Remember When. I mean, I did some work.
Yeah. All right, Vince? Good. It was good.
It starts out with them saying WAP twice. I mean, I don't think you get any better than that.
I have to belittle your work. It's my brand on this show.
I know. Yeah. I know.
April 2nd, 2000, that's a Sunday. You know, some of the headlines that we were working with on that day. From the New York Post, traders on Queasy Street after stock tumble. Investors were taken on a wild and scary bungee jump as the NASDAQ Composite Index tumbled for the second straight day, leaving shareholders to wonder whether the tech stock bubble is about to burst.
It sure is, dude. Too many people, buying into Wibistix. They're buying Wibistix, and then they're getting it gets sold out from under them.
Hey, I'm pumping and dumping over here.
Hey. You do wonder, what amount of mafiosos actually were doing pump and dump scams during the first internet dot-com bubble, because it seems like it's an interesting storyline that Chrissy has, but at the same time you're kind of just like, I mean, how close is this to just a regular ass job? You know what I mean? It does seem to me that to be a stockbroker and have a stockbroking scam, none of that feels expressly that illegal. So you do wonder.
Yeah. Also, I mean, Chris, it doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would be like, yeah, I'm going to sit in an office all day and trade stocks.
Yeah, it's right.
No, he probably wants to be out doing drugs.
Mostly doing drugs.
It doesn't strike me. I guess that's the comedy,
right? Sure.
Of it all is that it's absurd that he's doing this and engaging in this workaday sort of coffee drink and water cooler bullshit.
Right. Just seems like it's close enough to the fact that it's almost like as a scam, we have this great idea. We're all going to learn how to code in Python. And then once we get those six-figure jobs, we'll really be scamming. It not a scam. That's just a job.
How about just selling crack again?
Yeah, right. Yeah, something simple.
You're good at that. You're really good at selling crack.
Yeah, and smoking it.
I mean, Chris and Matt Bevilacqua were doing pump and dumps. And I like to think that, right after this NASDAQ crash, they got into mortgage broking.
Yeah.
I feel like they definitely became mortgage brokers after this.
They're like, okay, we have a new bubble to exploit. It's the housing bubble.
Yeah. You go out there and you get that refi.
That's right.
Have you heard of subprime mortgages? Yeah. This is crazy.
Other
headlines. Hey, I'm selling short over here. So stupid.
That short you got there is pretty big, Chris.
Yeah.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah. Hate to see something happen. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry, Vince.
Hate to see this get restructured. Other headlines. Leonardo DiCaprio's interview of President Clinton has set off a war of words between ABC News and the White House.
The fuck?
Yeah, so Leonardo interviewed Bill Clinton, and I guess people at ABC were pissed because they had their jobs taken by a movie star.
Interesting.
Yeah. Little did they know.
Yeah.
20 years later, the governor would be interviewed by his own brother, and we never cared about nepotism ever again.
We just forgot about it.
Top movies. Aaron Brockovich still on top.
Hell yeah.
And followed by some new releases, The Road to El Dorado.
Nice.
And The Skulls, which was
Oh,
really
Joshua Jackson.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Ah, I love that. Skull and Bones.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I never saw that movie. I don't want to speak out of turn, but like, is it about a pedophile ring? Like, I mean, we're talking about Skull and Bones here. I mean, who's to say?
They didn't get into the child sex slavery.
Oh, that's too bad. I feel like a remake of the Skulls, like today, would be mostly like a Pizzagate story. You know, like, just kind of feels like Skull and Crossbones, the way we used to look at secret societies, you know, back in the early 2000s, was like, oh man, you know what happens, all these like guys, they go to college together, they end up, they do a secret society, and then they all get good jobs. It's like, nowadays that's like the tame version of
it's weird because we all believe in secret societies now.
There are
so many elaborate like worldviews and superstructures that people have developed.
Yeah,
and this movie is just kind of like, it's a thriller, and at the end he succeeds in escaping the Skull and Bones.
Oh, that's good.
Weren't both George W. Bush and John Kerry in Skull and Bones?
Yeah.
So yes, like this were. Movie came out, and then the next two presidential candidates.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
they were normalizing it. They were normalizing it. It's all psyops.
Yeah, it reinforces my strongly held belief that art does nothing. And the idea that like you're going to kind of like enact some sort of you know, societal change through your either movie or your fucking TV show or your song or any
maybe
of that shit.
Maybe it just wasn't a good enough movie.
I mean, that's also
it was
possibly
pretty fucking
true.
Bad.
Yeah, yeah. That's
if they cast,
it was really terrible.
You know, if they cast like Leonardo DiCaprio or someone instead of Josh Jackson, maybe Al Gore gets elected, and then you know there is no John Kerry and Lieberman's president right now or something. No, that'd be pretty bad too.
That would be bad too.
Pretty old. Yeah.
Top song was "Maria Maria" by Carlos Santana, featuring The Product, G&B, who.
Ooh, that's a joint. Yeah.
That is a fucking joint.
That
dude.
Song is hot.
That is a hot one. It is you know, that Carlos Santana album really kicked.
Well,
restarted a Carlos's career. You know.
Mm-hmm.
It just really. I mean, that song. What is it? Forget about it. Hey. give me a hot, make a real, or else forget about it. It's perfect.
Are you just?
It works.
It really was a tacky time in American history, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it really was. That is the kind of like the temporal, contextual backdrop of The Sopranos, is living in the tackiest time in American history.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily the worst time. In fact, a pretty good time, but incredibly tacky.
What would you say? I feel like the period of peak tackiness was probably like 98 to like 2002 to 3, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I think that's about right. It was definitely like the new metal era and the boy band era and girl group era. Like that was just like where literally everyone's like choices for whether it was like music or style or everything was just created by mass media. So like you couldn't even really get out of the system of control, because if you hated like boy bands, you were like into Limp Bizkit, which was just another version of the same thing. So
or you'd have to make a concerted effort to find anything good.
Yeah.
It's so hard to find things that were good.
Yeah. And
and now it's like, oh, if you want to, you know, listen to every Pavement album ever made.
Right.
You could do that right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I enjoy 90s music from a completely different perspective now. And yeah, so you can enjoy Pavement and be like, why didn't I know about them back in the day? Yeah.
I didn't realize how bad it was until I watched this music video for a Canadian boy band called Before Four, which is like B4 and then -4. You got to look up that video because it's mind blowing. It's like three guys with like completely oranged hands with very spiky, like very like Ice Spiker ad kind of hair, wearing like very prominent puka shells. And man, it really is.
I had some puka shells in my
head.
Oh,
so did I.
We all did it.
Yeah,
we all did it.
But man, that video is something special.
It sure is. All right, let's get into this week's episode. So this episode is called "The Knight in White Satin Armor." Can you give us a quick synopsis, Vince?
I sure can. Engaged lovebirds, Richie and Janice, have an explosive first quarrel. Meanwhile, Irina takes drastic measures to try to convince Tony to continue their affair.
Yes, she sure does.
That's just really scratching the surface of what happens.
It really
episode.
Is. You know,
this is a busy episode.
I think I remembered this. I don't remember all the episodes from when I originally saw them, but this one like definitely stands out in my mind as one of the best Sopranos episodes ever.
It really is. And I actually didn't remember it being the best one of the best episodes ever. This rewatch like completely blew my mind. I think it's because at the time I was originally watching this season of The Sopranos, you really want to see the big pussy storyline being wrapped up, right?
I can't believe you didn't say titties, because I feel like every other episode you would have said
you
titties.
Really want to see some titties. And they don't show
up. Well, you get to see a little bit of Irina's nipples.
Yeah,
you do.
Yeah.
You do. And
very
I
peekaboo
God,
nipple.
God bless them. But yeah, no, I know that because at the time that I was watching it, it was a few seasons had already passed. I wasn't watching it on TV at the time that it was out. I think I started watching the show around like season 5 or something like that. But yeah, I knew what was coming when it came to Big Pussy, and I kind of wanted it to get there. So I remember watching this episode and being like, oh, this was really good, and it has some memorable moments. But I, watching it now, realize how much this episode fucks, and it fucks, I think, better than most Sopranos episodes fuck.
Agree.
Like,
so
it is.
I love that it feels like a complete meal.
Yeah. Yes.
That you get a resolution to every subplot in it.
Yes.
And then that final shot of Tony and Carmela on the couch and the distance and her saying, like, if I have to do all this stuff, I'll commit suicide.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, man, she ends up being the winner through this entire episode.
Yeah. Really, though.
I feel like if we jump ahead to DaReal Gangsta.
Go ahead.
You know. A good choice for this episode would be Carmela.
Yeah, DaReal Gangster. I was also thinking DaReal Gangster is a woman scorned.
Yep.
It's to me, this episode is, if I had to like sum it up in one word, it's about breakups. So I have some Bada B stories here. So Tony breaks up with Irina. Carm breaks it off with Vic. Big Pussy breaks up with DaMafia. Richie tries to get New Jersey to break up with Tony, if you know what I'm saying. And Janice breaks up with Richie. So I kind of saw this episode as like you said, it is a complete meal. It is all of the resolutions.
Like
it's a movie.
Like, yeah.
It does feel like a movie, yeah.
It's just so brilliantly done, and it is some of the best acting for every character in this episode is like doing the best acting of their career. It is just so perfect.
My question, we're talking about Big Pussy and that storyline. Do you think that this episode was like the beginning of us giving us permission to feel okay about him inevitably getting murdered?
Yes, absolutely. It's like the opposite of a save the cat moment in a script.
Yes.
It's like, what do we have to do to make you want to see this guy die?
Yeah.
Hitting a guy at a 7-Eleven clerk on a bike with your car and then walking away is one of those things.
Yeah, and then also being so clearly making this heel turn and having delusions that he's going to be in the FBI. Like, you're kind of tired of him at this point. Like, you're seeing that he is completely lost grips with reality, and you're just like...
They made him like an obnoxious cop wannabe. And for some reason, like that is always, you always want to see that kind of character fail.
Especially
like,
now. I mean,
yeah, kind of like, I mean, even today, there was that failed coup in Venezuela. And all I was doing was scrolling through like this like discount mercenaries fucking shitty Instagram. And you're just, I mean, there's something, I mean, I shouldn't like wish anything bad on the guy, I guess.
Sure,
but, like,
sure.
But yeah, there's something about like the, you know, the
fake cops.
Fake cops are uniquely dislikable, I would say.
Yeah, there's, and especially when there's something about the delusion, because it's like you can be a cop. You know, that's like a job that it's not impossible to get. But the idea of like I mean, with Big Pussy specifically, it's annoying that he is kind of like he's fooling himself, but he's also, there's something even more annoying about the fact that he has so suddenly decided, fuck everyone.
He has no moral compass anymore.
Yeah.
Like, the reason why we like, what we tolerate or are interested in Tony Soprano is because he has the same code that every gangster character in every movie and TV show and book has ever had.
Yeah.
And we find that noble. And then Big Pussy has the audacity to say, you know what? My entire life has been a waste.
Right.
I'm going down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel comfortable in this family anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go find a new family.
Yeah.
And I'm going to suck up to these people. And I'm completely delusional. And I have no values. I have no core.
Yeah.
I have no center. I am just looking for the next ship to be the barnacle on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think what makes it believable is like his entire life is based on, you know, like being loyal to some crew. And now he's just sort of like pledging a new crew. He's like, okay, well, I don't like this crew anymore. So I'm going to try and be a cop now.
Yeah. It's just like his identity is so wrapped up in whatever particular group of men that he is aligning himself with, that like he so easily goes from like being a wise guy to, you know, being like, okay, we have tactically ascertained the data that we need in order to, you know, it's just like,
you see too many TV shows.
You've seen too many TV shows. Exactly.
I think that there's unfortunately a lot of people like him in the world who don't know how to be individuals.
Yeah.
And we know how to be cogs in a machine.
Yeah.
And that's influenced and infiltrated politics to a degree that is really scary, is these people who are just, I'm a good soldier, that's what I do. I'm supposed to go to work and follow orders. And it doesn't matter if I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican, I'm gonna follow orders.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's, I find it repulsive.
Yeah, yeah. It is, it's pretty gross. And it's also they do such a good job of like showing the delusion to the fact that he thinks that like Skip and all of the people at the FBI are like, they have some sort of code, like a better code, and it's all, you know, completely comes crashing down in this moment where Skip and his FBI boss are in an office, and there is a gift bag from Tony Soprano. And he, you know, he's basically, Skip is telling him like, oh man, you know, something's going on with Big Pussy. You know, Bombincero is, he's losing it. He thinks he's going to be in the FBI. And then the guy's like, hey, remember, the important thing is that you might be getting too close to this guy. And then he goes and he eats the food that Tony Soprano has just sent him. And it's like, there's little moments like this where, I mean, as someone who knows like a lot about art, I gotta say, this episode's got a lot of good art. Like, there's a lot of art in it, and that's in like there's that moment. There's also
Well, I mean, it opens very artily.
Yeah.
Like it opens with ballroom dancing through the empty house, which I couldn't. When Tony and Carmela opened the door to that house, I kind of thought the like dancers were just, you know, like some sort of artsy dream sequence type thing. And then it's like, oh, no, that's Richie's son. And they're actually in the room dancing.
Yeah. So the episode actually begins with introducing a couple of great son characters. So it introduces Richie's gay son, Ricky. Or Richie Jr., not really sure.
Rick.
That apparently is, there's some conflict.
Little Ricky.
Little Ricky when he was a kid, Richie now that he's a adult, I don't know. So introduces Richie's gay son. It also introduces Jackie Jr., two characters who were, well, I guess Jackie you're going to get to know a lot more about in season 3. He is Richie Aprile's nephew. He's the son of, what was it? Jackie. He was the son of Jackie Aprile, the former head of the New Jersey family.
Who's Jackie Jr.'s father again? I can't remember.
Oh, that's right. I am not a smart man. I just know about art, Vince.
Yeah.
It also introduces a few other characters that we're going to know a little bit more about. Ali Boy Barisi and Svetlana Kirilenko.
One of the great TV characters of all time, in my opinion.
Unbelievably great character. Svetlana is just introduced, and just in her short amount of screen time, she steals every scene that she's in. So she is a one-legged Russian who I think is, what is it? She's related to Irina as what, cousins or something? Or they could just be friends. I thought they were related in some way.
I don't remember what they said exactly about how they were related.
Yeah, so Svetlana has one leg, and she is the queen of, like, passively discussing tragedy. Like, she she has a way of talking about tragic things in this very Russian way. She has a great line where she's explaining to Tony the troubles with Irina's past, where she goes, her parents were alcoholics. Horrible industrial city. Father died at 55 years old. Lung cancer, cirrhosis of the liver. Probably was a good thing. It's just like, just the way that she speaks about these horrible, tragic things, and the way that she's able to kind of like overcome them. You later in subsequent seasons, you get to see Tony's admiration for this character, but it was beautiful meeting her. And the reason that we meet her is because Tony breaks up with Irina, which is a big plot point, a big B story in this episode.
Svetlana is her cousin, by the way. I just had to check.
Yes. Yeah. So Svetlana is her cousin. So Irina gets, first she gets subtitled and then she gets dumped, which I think is a double whammy, because I don't know about you guys, but I feel like I understood Irina just fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
and there were some moments where it gets a little garbled.
She's got a,
but I feel like way about the Jersey accent, where I turned on my subtitles just so I made sure that I caught every detail of all of the nonsense people were saying.
That's a good point. I have subtitles on all the time when I'm watching anything.
Yeah, I do too, but I feel like that's a modern sound mixing thing, because like when I watch The Sopranos, it's one of the few shows where I actually don't need the subtitles on. But
oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I have it on because there's things that, you know, you never know what you're not catching. Sometimes you like, I recently watched Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, and it really helps to have subtitles, especially during like the Jar Jar Binks scenes, because he's actually saying a lot more like deep shit than you would know. Like,
there's a lot of subtext. There's art in that.
There's art in Jar Jar. But yeah, Jar Jar. but yeah, so Irina gets broken up with by Tony, and then attempts suicide, and Tony feels bad for her and tries to get her some therapy. Vince, I have a clip. It's called A Quart of Vodka.
I need you to give me the number of a good shrink for a girl I was seeing.
Was?
Yeah, I broke up with her and she tried to kill herself. This was no small cut. And 20 halcyon and a quart of vodka. Dare me to drive?
Yeah.
You guys remember from Eminem?
Oh, yeah.
I heard that song a couple times.
He's the famous rap guy.
He's the famous, That's an awful hot coffee pot. Should I drop it on Irina? Probably not. I'll stop. this is a very Russian-heavy episode. I don't know if you guys noticed that there's multiple scenes where Irina's Russian heritage just in general causes her trouble. I have some clips that show kind of like Russia's mark on this episode.
She should have been seen by the psychiatrist in the hospital.
He was a Romanian and they have some beef that goes back centuries, and she wouldn't talk to him.
A prosthetic leg fell off in the Gap store, and her bill picks her up and carries her.
Her parents, both of them were alcoholics in Petrozavodsk, horrible industrial city.
I know what is. I am not going to no shrink.
Psychiatrist is very scary thing for Russian. Means being sent to Gulag, political rehabilitation.
The father died, 55 years old. Lung cancer, cirrhosis of the liver. Probably was good thing anyway.
Who's calling, please? What are you, that Polish maid? I want to talk to Tony. Позови его к ебаному телефону, ты усатая польская крестьянка.
Hello.
Tony, I miss you.
Tony, Johnny, I miss you. Johnny.
She's so hot.
You know,
by
this
the way.
Is. Yeah. Well,
I find her grotesque. <It's> just, so I watched this. I watched The Sopranos contemporary to when it came out.
Okay.
So when this episode dropped on April 2nd, 2000, I was watching this with my family.
Wow.
Watch this as a group.
Yeah, that's hard.
Sit down in the living room and watch The Sopranos. And after it was over, we would talk about it because my parents were both sort of like, let's consider the meanings and subtext of this.
You guys were doing rewatch podcasting before that was even possible.
Yeah. That's why I'm such a douchebag now. I think I know everything. Mm-hmm. But my parents, my mom especially, was like, oh, Irina is the worst. Why doesn't Tony just kill her? Well, then she won't be a problem anymore.
I mean,
she's unlikable because she's so needy. My mother is expressing something about how much she despises women who need men, who she sees as parasites.
Sure.
I guess I kind of feel that way now, too. It's like, I just hate her. I just can't stand anything about her.
I mean, I think in general, I have a little bit more sympathy for her because of her story of, you know, they met at the Bing, right? You know, she was a stripper and like, you know, she's being led on by this fucking, you know, dangerous mafioso and she's got no direction in life. I don't know. There's something about also like I like her titties and like I like her face is pretty. She got that kind of like pretty Russian face. I don't know, dude. She's just hot to me.
They really
am I crazy?
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, I mean they really went for all the Russian stereotypes in this one, which I appreciate.
They did.
I mean, this was also, if as we remember from previous installments of Remember This, this was like right before Putin got elected. So, you know, that's all backdrop for people who are like, yeah, Putin's fucked up, but remember before Putin, you know, people's uncles were dying of cirrhosis of the liver, their legs were falling off in the Gap store, all the bad stuff was going on.
Yeah,
I love the leg.
I
love the her leg fall off in Gap store. That's like
fall off in
the worst possible place to lose your leg is the Gap.
Yeah. And like the most romantic thing that she can imagine is like your leg falls off in the Gap and someone carries you out of there like a fucking princess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They're not exactly dreaming big over here. Like, like she wants her knight to wear white satin. Like, it is.
Well, that's a beautiful play on words.
Sure, you know, sure.
Knights. I mean, knight in white shining armor, knights in white satin. This is my first episode title where I don't think I could come up with a better title than the one that they already used.
And I think it is the first, it's also the first episode title that also is the episode's malapropism corner.
Yes, exactly.
This is the only one I could find in terms of malapropisms was Knight in White Satin Armor. But yeah, I mean, I really appreciate the detail that they go into with, like, Irina's problems. She can't fucking... She couldn't see the psychiatrist in the hospital because he was Romanian and there's beef there. She hates the Polish maid because she's Polish and Irina's Russian. It's like, and their entire conversation is so fucking funny. It's just like, oh, are you the Russian whore? You're not the first one, you know. And then she's like, put him on the phone right now, you bearded Polish hag. Like,
that Polish maid she's got a real bad attitude. I don't know why they keep her around. Who hurt her?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not
she's
sure.
She's probably nice to the kids.
Yeah, you know, and she puts up with a lot. I mean, she puts up with the
Sopranos. She's got to keep quiet, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure.
You can't get rid of somebody you trust.
I'm positive they're underpaying her for the amount
of
work.
I just want to see her muttering, I was engineer in Poland.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, her husband was an engineer.
That's right. And now that's right.
He fixes water heaters, which we'll get into in the next episode, I believe. But yeah, so in general, I was just in love with the entire arc of Irina because of the fact that she's like, you know, she tries to commit suicide. She won't seek therapy. And Tony, in order to be the good guy that he thinks he is, just pays her $75,000. Just straight up pays her off. And there's a moment where she says $75,000 after Syl brings it over, where I'm not sure if she thinks that's a lot or a little. I assume she thinks it's a lot.
I don't know either.
Yeah,
I got that. Yeah, it was ambiguous. I got the feeling she thought it wasn't enough. Like, oh, that's all I'm worth to you.
Yeah, I wasn't sure though because I think she thinks it's a lot because this is also a woman who, believes that if your leg falls off, if someone carries you, that's like the height of romance.
Yeah.
But again, there are moments you can't tell. Another one was she's talking about a limo driver that she met who brought in Karl Lagerfeld. And Tony says something like, do you want to, are you going to, something going to happen with him and you? And she says something along the lines of like, he's a fucking limo driver. But I wasn't sure she meant that as a bad thing. I think she meant it as like, he drives limo. He is a big, powerful man.
No, I thought she meant like, oh,
he's a loser.
Yeah, he's a driver. I'm not going to date that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess possibly. Yeah, that's probably true. But
I'm pretty sure that the character is meant to be not necessarily a quote unquote gold digger.
Sure.
In the traditional sense, but at least someone who has aspirations to wealth.
Yeah.
And I think that she saw Tony was the opportunity to go legit.
Yeah.
Like maybe I can force him to leave his wife and stay with me.
Mm.
And there's a status of being a guma.
Yeah.
There's financial rewards. There's clearly sexual rewards. Mm. She likes having sex with the man.
Yeah.
I can't get the image of the first scene of them together where they're just, he's just finishing.
Yeah.
He's just orgasming in her really hard. Yep.
Just like a little, just like a little pug nuzzling your neck and wheezing.
Yeah. Just like, just like not even full pumps. Just kind of like, just kind of like squirming on her. I think she thought the limo driver was a loser.
Yeah, yeah.
They couldn't do anything for her, and $75,000 simply wasn't enough.
So, Mike,
because that's what's middle class people make in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, my question:
summertime and the living is thirsty. At least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on Earth. Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent, and it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S., and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji water.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
It's not quite enough.
My question is Irina young Russian Livia or is Svetlana young Russian Livia? Because they both have their Livia-esque qualities to me.
Sure. I would say Irina more than Svetlana, because Irina is much more manipulative, whereas Svetlana seems to be kind of like, she really is sort of a bootstraps type lady, where Livia was also a parasite. Like, Livia was, you know, clearly benefiting from everything that Tony's father was doing and whatnot. I see her as like parasitic, both like in terms of money, but also emotionally parasitic. I mean, definitely Irina and Livia share some qualities together, but I wouldn't go so far as to call Irina, you know, a carbon copy of Livia. Livia, has,
I mean, they're both hot.
They are both, yeah, they're both hella fuckable. But Livia has one particular carbon copy in this show as of this point, and I think it's Janice.
Sure.
I think Janice is Livia. And in terms of Janice's storyline, you can't talk about Janice's storyline without getting into Richie. And, like, you know, Janice is just excited about the wedding, right? So she's, like, they're having this, like, pre-wedding party. I don't know what you could, was that an engagement party? What was that?
Yeah.
So it was
something like that.
It was an engagement party. There's a lot of love going on, and you know, Carm feels a little bit sad because she feels like while she's watching someone who has actually, you know, found their soulmate, you know, she herself is like.
Imagine being sad because looking at like Janice and Richie Aprile and being like, "Ugh, I wish I had that."
You know,
it just shows you how demented these people are.
Yeah.
She sees that as some sort of romantic gesture when it's just Janice trying desperately to have some purpose in her life.
Yes.
And Richie just wants to marry into the soprano.
Exactly. And it's, you know, and this was Richie's entire plan. You know, like Richie from day one of this episode of the season, you know, he is like entering Janice's yoga class and like doing downward facing dog and just staring at her with his fucked up Manson lamps. And just like he knew this was the plan the entire time. And I, you know, again, Shireen, her theory of Richie is that Richie is secretly gay and in the closet. And it fits in with kind of like the calculated nature of like dating Janice Soprano.
Yeah.
You know, like the fact is he is seeing his plan to fruition. At this point, he's right about to marry into Tony's family and basically become untouchable.
He's either closeted or he has like a medieval lord's conception of marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so cartoonishly evil in this episode.
Yeah.
You know, Janice tells Carmela, like, no Guma is going to let Jackie hold a gun to their head, or Jackie Richie hold a gun to their head when having sex.
Yeah.
And like, that's, you know, there's something really depraved about that.
There's something.
Well, we had the argument a couple episodes ago when they actually showed it. Like, or I actually thought that was Janice's kink, but I guess in this one, Matt was proved right in that it actually was Richie's kink and not hers.
Yeah, and
I think there's probably a little bit of it for Janice.
Sure,
that she likes.
Yeah,
yeah, because
she just likes attention.
Yeah, yes. And also like, you know,
and she likes she's a parody of open-minded, so she's like, oh yes. Yeah, sure.
She absolutely is a parody of open-minded. Like she would love Joe Rogan's podcast. You know what I mean? like Janice Soprano is a huge Joe Rogan fan. But
I love what she says. It's fetishistic.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, right.
She's throwing that word around really hard.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
She's so proud of herself for being so open-minded.
Yeah, and like Carm even says, like, I thought you were a feminist, And so there is part of me that goes like, yeah, but that only makes it more hot to get fucked with a gun to your head. I also like that Janice goes, sometimes it's not loaded.
Yeah, that also made me
laugh. That's a great line. Yeah.
She is just so happy to, one, be financially taken care of.
Yeah.
Two, to be back in the family.
Yes.
And back in the good graces of everyone.
Absolutely.
And three, to stick it to her mom.
Yeah.
And say, look at me. I'm marrying, you know, this big, powerful mob guy.
Yeah.
Isn't this exciting? I have this big house. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than Tony's. It's going to be nicer than Tony's.
Yeah.
It's just, she's such a loathsome character, but also you do feel bad for her. I feel terrible.
Oh, Livia coming through the fucking intercom. First of all, that's peak Livia, is just like being able to be involved in the conversation and just like coming through like a squawky drive-through voice, like, what are you saying? I can't hear you down there.
How do I open this Advil bottle? No, never mind. Like, yeah, it is the fact that they have to give her two Nebutol just to have one night without her is like fucking Jesus Christ. What a nightmare.
But can we talk about the scene with Alley Boy Breezy? Because this scene was like, you love it. To me, it was odd. Like, I didn't quite get it. Like, the him repeating things that Richie was saying, I didn't entirely understand it.
Yeah, so this is a scene where basically Richie is, you know, has just told Junior, we got
to
get rid of Tony.
He's trying
to
get a head
count. We
got
to get rid of him.
The troops to see who's down for this coup.
And see who's down to do it. Yeah, and so he goes to Alley Boy Barisi, whose brother, Larry Boy, who we will meet later in later seasons, is currently serving time.
I didn't need that shit that happened the other day.
You don't need that shit that happened the other day.
You talked to the king of dermabrasion about what went down.
I'm talking to him, and he's looking at his reflection in the plexiglass.
Imagine getting a facelift 1 week later, you're in jail.
Can you imagine that? You get a facelift, 1 week later, you're in jail?
Anyway, I had the feeling you didn't like what you were hearing.
What's Larry gonna do? The fucking guy's a guest of the government.
Yeah, well, some people are stuffing themselves.
Some people are out there stuffing themselves. Only Larry's got a trial coming up. He's in no position to go into the unknown, not known.
How about you, Albert? You weigh in any time.
I'm with him.
All things being equal?
No. Make a move against Tony Soprano. No way. I don't know what to tell you.
Let me tell you why I love that scene. That scene is what I would call doing art. So it is like...
They're definitely doing art.
They're doing art. First of all, the performances in the scene are really good. Alley Boy's character, makes some appearances in The Sopranos later on. But there's something very natural about his performance as Alley Boy. Just like even the like kind of cartoonish repeating what the other guy just said thing. It comes off as real. It doesn't come off as like corny to me at all. It just felt very well acted. And what I love about that scene is that it just shows Richie's ineptitude at getting people on board, including very stupid people like Alley Boy Barisi. Like, Alley is an idiot, right? He's like your dumb Guido meathead who should be very easy to convince because he's a dumb Guido meathead. And he is literally just repeating back to Richie everything that he's saying. And then finally, when Richie gets to the point where like, what do you think? Do you want to kill Tony? He goes, no. Kill, whack Tony Soprano? I don't want to do it. And then his last words of the scene are, I don't know what to tell you. What he's been telling him the entire time is exactly what he's just said. Everything he's telling Richie everything he wants to hear up until that point. You know, he's like kind of agreeing with them. And then but Richie can't sell it. So there's something about it that's like maybe I'm being too literal, but there's something that I think is like brilliant about the way that Alley Boy is able to go from like this guy who's got probably no mind of his own to someone who's like, let me think on this. No, just a no.
I don't know. See, if I buy that scene, I don't get meathead moron from it. Like, if I buy that scene as written, like the way he's repeating everything, I get the fact that he is playing stupid you know, and yeah. almost to the point where he's like sending a message where he's like, I'm not going to say anything at all that's going to get me in trouble, to the point that, of course, I'm not going to go along with your plan.
Yeah,
I'm way too smart for you to try and trick me into, like, you're not going to trick me into going along with something like that. Was it seemed like it was all calculated. Otherwise, why would he make it so obvious that he was just like literally repeating the things back to him? Like,
yeah, I definitely don't think he's dumb. I think that you're right, Vince, that there's a calculation behind all of the repetition, and that Richie is just really bad at reading people and manipulating people, which is unfortunately for Richie, one of the necessities of being a mob boss is manipulation and intimidation and coercion.
I mean, I thought that it felt like up until this point, he was able to be pretty good at manipulating people, pretty good at intimidating people. But this scene with Allie, it was just like it all went out the window. He couldn't read what he was doing. You're right. He could be just repeating what he's saying in order to not say anything to incriminate himself. And maybe he's being careful, but you see these moments when you know, Allie Boy is repeating the exact same thing that Richie said, where Richie will take like a pause and kind of look at him and try to analyze, like, what the fuck is
nothing,
he doing?
He's getting nothing from this guy.
And I'm getting nothing from him.
I think Richie's character is that he has no finesse, and that's kind of been his character like all along, which is he understands like the punitive parts of being a mobster, where, you know, you fucking shake down Beansy and you run him over. You know, his conception of being a mob boss is basically do whatever you want and fuck them if they don't like it. And that's like his entire.
Yeah.
And so his like entire conflict with Tony is like, you know, Tony's like, no, don't sell coke on the garbage routes because you're missing the big picture. Like, you're going to make a little money here and then you're going to lose and then you're going to screw it all up. But like Richie's entire thing is that he's incapable of, you know, like,
of not doing stupid violent shit.
He reacts out of vengeance and like more.
And that's why he ends up getting killed.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's because he takes that same mentality.
Yeah.
That he brings to his job, into his marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can't just leave well enough alone with Janice and just go along with how annoying she is.
Yeah, right.
So that he can get what he wants down the road, which is to usurp Tony.
Yeah.
He has to punch her in the face.
Yeah, yeah. He sure does.
Besides our moral objection to him punching her in the face, it's also just not very smart.
Yeah.
From a deviousness perspective.
But that was it was a very funny scene, though. I mean, that was like a really, like, it was a brilliant scene. He punches her, which was like shocking, and then she comes back with a gun, which like doubled. Which her shooting him is like, it's kind of like a Hollywood twist in a way. Like, it doesn't feel, it's like a bigger leap than you usually see in The Sopranos. But then they totally made it work, you know? Like,
yeah,
it seems to make sense for her character.
Yeah,
and that she's more powerful than she understands.
Yes.
And as the series goes on, she kind of figures it out a little bit.
Yeah.
But in season two, she's just like, what am I doing? Who am I?
Right.
You know, this kind of thing. And then he punching her is like the threat that kind of knocks her out of like whatever illusions that she's had about
whatever
being powerless.
Yeah. Whatever stupor that she's been in this whole time, thinking that this relationship is going to be the thing that gets her power. She's completely knocked out of that stupor when she gets punched and is just like, and she's acting on impulse and rage for sure. But she also knows that she can do this, and
she's a soprano
and there won't be consequences.
She's Livia's daughter. And then, I mean, and he punched her not like over some sort of strategic disagreement, which you'd think they would have because she's constantly like goading him to do things differently. And a lot of the things that he's doing with Tony are like kind of orchestrated by her. But like when he actually like lashes out at her, it's, it's just her implying that his son is gay and he gets pissed. And then.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
By the way, can we talk about that son's haircut? Holy shit. That was a fucking.
Very 90s.
Yeah.
That was very 90s. Yeah. In fact, I think it's time for you to play the bumper for our next segment
called It's the 90s.
It's the 90s. Parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s.
Hell yeah. So yeah, definitely Richie's son, Ricky, has...
It's I Rick, mean, man. He hasn't been called Little Ricky since he was 12 years old.
Sure, sure, sure. So Rick is got a very 90s. I would say he strikes me as a 90s gay, where it's like he is got the haircut and the dancing and whatnot. It just felt like... and now, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but obviously Ricky Martin hadn't come out yet. But Ricky Martin as a, you know, superstar of the time, he was definitely, you know, he was a big deal. People, I think, had suspected he was gay. And there was part of me that was going like, they've modeled Rick or Ricky after Ricky Martin a little bit. So I don't know. Part of me was like, is there a Ricky Martin tie-in with Ricky? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think anybody who professes any interest in the arts within the world of the New Jersey Mafia is going to be called gay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I saw Frankie Valli, and maybe it's just because, you know, I'm still hearing your bumper calling me WAP. But like I saw Frankie Valli in that character. Like, what, you know, like what if we made like the literal like the embodiment of what Frankie Valli's like voice sounds like? That's kind of mm-hmm. what I imagine Rick would be.
Sure, sure. The other 90s things, and there was just one other one in particular that I loved, was Big Pussy is trying to get some dirt on a wire for the FBI because he thinks he's an FBI agent now. And so he goes to see what Chris Moltisanti is doing at his investment firm. And Chris tells him about a Pokemon card heist that he's about to go on.
Pokemon.
We got those Pokemon cards. And it's just like, oh, that is a 90s mafia heist if there ever
made
was
a killing
one.
On those Beanie Babies on the other truck. So this one, I got high hopes for this one. Still got a truck of Pogs I can't get rid of, but...
Yeah, but Pokemon is still popular.
Yeah, I know.
No. So jokes on us, man.
Jokes on us. Turns out Pokemon will never die. So yeah, back to Richie. Richie ends up punching Janice in the mouth, and all of the work that he's done up until this point, all of the time that he's put in to, like, I mean, just the having sex with Janice alone, you know. The time that he's put in to get to where he is after, you know, doing 10 years in the can, only to have it all come crashing down. It's just like, it made me kind of sad because it's like, I don't like Richie Aprile, but it is one of those things where I respect the hustle, you know?
Yeah, he's a game-recognized
game. Game-recognized game.
Great character. I wish he hadn't brought up the fucking jacket again. Bringing up the fucking jacket yet again did make me slightly happy to see him go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For that reason alone, I was like, all right, kill his ass. But like, other than him bringing up the stupid fucking jacket, I was sad to see him go. And of course, I have a clip of Richie's final scene.
My fucking dinner on the table, and keep your mouth shut.
Now you shut up. But just because he's a ballroom dancer, you think your son is gay? And what if he was gay? What difference does it make?
Oh. Who are you looking at? You gonna cry now? Fuck out of here. I'm in no mood for your... Ow. Oh.
Because it's from it's from Kill Bill,
yeah,
but it's also from La Bamba.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah,
and I mix them together. I put them in my computer.
That's good. I mean, I love Sleepwalk from La Bamba, so I respect that one.
So okay, so I put in my computer actual audio of the show, and then I said, "What have I put from Kill Bill?" So I put the Kill Bill. The wee woo, and then I'll put the Richie from La Bamba. So yes, anyways.
Someday we'll have like a making of, you know, the sound effects.
Yeah, it's a Ken Burns documentary about how you made the fucking drops. Jesus Christ.
Just all the drops in, are gold.
Just to zoom in on a picture of Matt at his coffee table wearing a gray tank top.
All
trying not to jack off.
Yeah, dude. Just like,
I know I want to jack off, but I can't. I'm busy.
I'm going to jack off as soon as this La Bamba joke hits. So that is the end of Richie, and very sad. Of course, Tony then calls, Janice then calls Tony and, you know, immediately has her come over. And, you know, Tony at this point, he has already pulled the trigger on getting Richie whacked, you know, because Junior realizes that Richie couldn't sell the hit. So says, OK, I got to warn Tony now because I'm better off with him. And yeah, then, you know, Tony comes over and just cleans up the mess, and
the smile on his face, when like, so you can wonderful. See him in the background, and he just goes like, oh,
he covers
he's so
he best covers day ever mouth. For him.
Yeah, because, like, you know, he was going to do it. And, you know, I was a little surprised at, like, how quickly he pulls the trigger on it. And, you know, cause he's been thinking about it for a while, but, like, he's felt stuck. But then as soon as, like, Richie made a move against him, he just is like, all right, Syl, what do you think? And Syl's like, yeah, you know what? I don't think it would be a problem. And he pulls the trigger on it. And the fact that he is not responsible for it makes him so happy. And you see it in his face. Yeah.
Otherwise he has to kill his sister's husband.
Yeah, no, it's a bummer, and it's very nice how it all works out.
I can't imagine having to kill your sister's husband, like, on the eve of her wedding day.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, and you knowing your sister already hates you.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and knowing your sister, you know, is going to, I mean, his sister's a loose cannon at this point. Like, he doesn't know what she's gonna do.
Yeah, and she seemed like she was angling to have him killed. Really,
yes,
not that he knows that, but.
That was
her plan.
Yeah, Junior warns him too. Like, you know, I'd be interested to see what my little niece had to do with all this. You know, like, he knows. You know, ever since Janice stole some money from his wallet when she was a child, yeah. Like, he's known that she was no good. But yeah, so Tony catches a lucky break. And, you know, gets rid of the body for Janice. And then there's this scene where I, you know, obviously this podcast is a lot of laughs, is a lot of good times, a lot of great jokes, but the scene where Livia and Tony finally talk to each other got me right in the fucking feels. Did you guys?
I thought it was also hilarious though.
Oh, it was
very funny.
It was hilarious.
Nancy Marchand is funny the entire series, but when she turns and becomes malevolent,
yes.
It's really terrifying.
It's terrifying, but it's also like she has an effect on me. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's my own personal issues with it where I'm very easily, I'm easy to manipulate if you're, let's say, a mother or a girlfriend mm-hmm. or just a friend. Like, you can manipulate me very easily. So I found myself being pretty manipulated during her entire exchange with Tony. And I have it. It's a long clip, but I really like it if you want to play it.
Richie didn't come home last night. She's worried about him.
Oh, sure. Probably jilted her. That's the story of her life.
What kind of a fucking chance did she have with you as her mother? You're always nagging her about her weight. She goes out on a date, she comes home, you call her a fucking tramp.
I'm on the way out in the car. I never said anything of the kind.
I heard you.
You make things up. You tell me. Now you tell me when I ever did anything to any of you.
You don't know, do you? You don't have a fucking clue.
I wasn't always perfect, but I always tried to do the best I could. And I know you didn't, any of you didn't like it when I tried to tell you what to do. Babies are like animals. They're no different than dogs. Somebody has to teach them right from wrong. But I was your mother. Who else was gonna do it? If you ask me, I did a pretty damn good job. That palace you live in, up there on that hill. I gave my life to my children on a silver platter. I suppose now you're not going to kiss me.
What?
You're cruel. That's what you are.
Oh, fuck this.
Oh, no. No. Oh.
I just thought that that scene was some of the best acting that
I mean,
I've seen
writing,
on the show.
Writing Tony falling down and dropping his gun as he leaves the house is just like a stroke of pure genius. Because they have that whole dramatic moment. And then, you know, you still leaven it with that just completely unexpected moment of him falling and dropping his gun. That was so perfect.
And her laughing
and her laughing
like
immediately.
Just taking so much pleasure in his misery. It's just like just the most hateful thing.
Yeah, I mean, she is manipulative and hateful and all of the things, but she, like, there's something about that scene with that character where I also feel like she is suffering and she's a victim of her own mishigas. Like, she is fucked up. She can't help that she is as cruel as she, you know, pretends Tony is. You know, it's almost like she can't help but laugh at the fact that her son has fallen and hurting himself. It's like,
well, right after he gave it to her.
I mean, it was right after he gave it to her, but it was also like, it was just you immediately after, you know, he gets up, picks himself back up and goes into the car. It's a shot again of her as she closes the door and she's crying again. And so it's like, it is hard to tell with Livia whether or not, like, you know that she is manipulative. You know that she is, you know, a pretty rotten person, but you do see a lot of the human side in her. And in that scene particularly, I just felt so, I felt terrible for her, even though I know I shouldn't. You know
what
I mean?
What do you make of the now you're not even going to kiss me line?
I don't know. It was odd and it was, you know, and obviously Tony was thrown off by it. I'm not sure other than trying to frame him as cruel by asking him to do something or saying you're not going to do something that he's never done or something that he just doesn't do. I'm not sure. It's hard to tell with her how much of, you know, her emotional state is just like her being old and kind of losing her mind. I don't know. It's ambiguous to me. All I know is that I found myself almost crying at that scene and I was like, she is one of, oh, she's such a treasure. She's such a fucking good actress. I love her so much.
Such a great mom.
A great mom, dude. We'd all be lucky to have a mom like that. A mom who cares so much about us that, you know, and cares so much about the family that she's willing to murder you just to save the family. That's a good mom, dude. That's a
noble.
That's a noble mom, you know. She puts family over everything, even her family, individual family members. On a silver platter. Finally, there is the Janice goodbye scene, which was just another brilliantly written, brilliantly acted scene that I have a clip of.
I'm not going to forget this, Tony. I owe you. God, do I owe you.
All in all, though, I'd say it was a pretty good visit.
What's wrong with our family, Tony?
I go to a shrink. She says that our mother is a narcissistic personality. And when she turned out that way, who the fuck knows?
But you told me you were going to a shrink. I used to suggest it, and you'd blow your sack at me.
Maybe you want to think about it. You know, going back into therapy.
What'd you do with him?
We buried him. On a hill, overlooking a little river, with pine cones all around.
You did?
Come on, Janice, what the fuck? What do you care what we did with him? Huh? What do you want to know?
I loved him so much.
You're going to miss your bus.
I'm sorry. I am so sorry.
So good.
It's fucked up because obviously Janice really did love that guy.
Yeah.
What the hell? She really she was crying over the dead body. Oh my baby.
It was very she is
You killed the motherfucker with two bullets.
I mean
she shot him more than once.
She is Livia Soprano. That's the thing. That's what I love about her so much is like is seeing so much of her mother in her. Because at first, when the character is introduced earlier in the season, you're like, this is a woman who tried to get as far away as possible from the Soprano name, the Soprano, just the entire mental illness of being a Soprano, right? And then as soon as she's like back in there, you realize, oh, she is exactly like Livia. Like Livia was the same way, probably. You know, happy as fuck when, her husband, what was Tony's father's name?
Johnny,
right. So probably as Johnny is dying of cancer or whatever, she's probably happy as fuck. As soon as he is dead, she is like, he was a saint.
And then
and it was like, bitch, you probably killed him.
Yeah,
like, you're probably the one who, like, gave him cancer through nagging. Is that possible?
The perfect cognitive dissonance between your actions and the result of your actions is, like, that yes. scene where she's, you know, she's trying to ask Tony to mourn the guy that she just murdered with her.
It seems to me like both of them, yes. Janice and Livia, are victims. They have to be victims.
Yes.
And so by claiming the legacy of Richie Aprile, mm-hmm. and mourning him, she can continue to be the victim.
Yeah, exactly.
My poor husband is dead.
Exactly. Yeah. She's a widow now.
Yeah, like, the martyr. She loves being, they all love being martyrs, and they get that.
They
from
love
Livia.
Being
yeah.
martyrs. It's some sort of Catholic thing. I don't know. But it is they love their martyrdom. But again, you know, just like to me, this is one of the most well acted episodes of The Sopranos. It's just like she is so good. Janice, what is that? Ada Turturro. She's like,
yeah.
She's just
John Turturro's sister.
John Turturro's sister can fucking act. It is like that scene alone. I'm just like, God damn, she's good. Just like she does love him that much. She just also killed him. Is that a conflict? Possibly. Is there, you know, but it's what happened, you know, that's reality. And she just kills it in that scene. And the way she is legitimately sorry, she seems more sorry, less sorry about the fact that he's dead and more sorry about the fact that Tony had to clean it up for her. And I love Tony's line, you know, all in all, I would say this is a pretty good trip. Or a pretty successful visit.
Him fucking with her about like, oh yeah, we buried him on a hill with some pine cones is just perfect. Like,
it's just
perfectly believable. Also a great joke. Just great writing all around.
Yeah, just a perfect episode. And Dave, like you said, it ends with Carm, you know, basically telling Tony, I'm gonna go on this trip to Rome with Ro. And you're going to have to take care of the kids because if I have to stay here, I may just end up committing suicide, you know, which is her.
It's one of her best episodes. One of yeah. Edie Falco's best episodes.
Yeah. And
that moment when she calls Richie and Janice's house.
Just
Livia's
to check.
House,
yeah.
Just to make sure he's actually there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real good.
Yeah. Yeah. It sucks, you know, to have to kind of like steamroll over most of Edie Falco's, you know, the performance and also just her B story in this. But it's like there is something about Edie Falco who is, I think, by far the best actress on the show, if not one of the best actors who ever lived, that because she's so good, you almost kind of like overlook it in episodes where other characters end up having really good acting. You're just like, oh, wow, everyone really acted well. Meanwhile, Edie Falco is killing it
just
in every scene.
Her face in that scene where she finds out about Janice's gun sex, like, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't have the exciting sexy part in this episode. It's very much just character stuff of her coming to terms with Tony's infidelity and figuring out how to live with that.
Yeah,
like she has a full complete arc in the episode, just in the episode.
Yeah,
just in the 60 minutes of the episode. And that's goes back to what I was saying about this feeling like a complete meal. Yes. Every character has changed mm-hmm. so much from where they start to where it ends.
Yeah, and you know, she's like one of the few people in the series that's made the moral choice. You know, especially in this episode, she you know finds Vic at his you know painting store or whatever, and tells him like, "I'm glad you didn't come that day because something bad could have happened. And just so you know, I'm not going to be pursuing this, you know, goodbye. Maybe I'll be free someday. Goodbye." It's just like, she's the only one who does the right thing. And, you just love her for it. You just, she's so good. You know, I just like, you could probably do a podcast just on Edie Falco on the show. Yeah. Well, I think that pretty much covers all of the good art that we saw in this episode. I would say, you know, all in all,
Matt loves art.
Matt loves art. It's a solid B+. Yeah, Dave, thanks so much for coming on Pod Yourself a Gun.
Oh, of course. I haven't watched The Sopranos in years, and going back to watch this episode, I was like, man, I'm due for a rewatch. This show, it holds up.
Yeah.
It's very late 90s, early 2000s, yes, in a lot of ways, aesthetically and the way the drama is, but it's still really fucking good.
Yeah,
and it's worth checking out
again. Definitely. I suggest that to everyone, especially in these the days of the Quar. You know, you've got nothing yeah. else to do, might as well do a Sopranos yeah. rewatch. And while you're at it, check out Pod Yourself a Gun. It's a great podcast. where can people find you online to follow you?
I am at Dave_Schilling on Twitter. Check that out. And then my podcast, Full Court Chat with Dave Schilling, is going to debut very soon. We've recorded it's a 6-episode limited series where I interview some really amazing athletes and exciting you know, guests in culture. So
nice.
Check that out.
We will check that out. Everyone, thank you for listening. Email us for, you know, any comments, questions, concerns that you have. Fraudcast@gmail.com. Also patreon.com/fraudcast for bonus episodes of our regular show. And we talk about not just The Sopranos, but all sorts of movies, television shows. Sometimes we just talk about how our day is going. So check out the bonus episodes there. Vince, what's the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, thank you so much for listening, everyone, and until next time, don't stop believing.
Thanks, guys, that was fun. Yeah, Sopranos is fucking good. I need to watch that show again, honestly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, have you heard about Tim Horton's new happy hour? Get 50% off summer menu drinks after 2 p.m., Monday to Thursday.
50% off?
Yeah, try the new Cocoa Caramel Crunch Iced Cap, Butter Pecan Cold Brew, Mango Frozen Lemonade, Solar Splash Tim's Boost, and Berry Cherry Refresher.
There are so many options. That's really good.
Discover a new favorite with Tim's summer menu and enjoy 50% off during happy hour, only at Tim's. Limited time at participating U.S. restaurants. Terms apply.